morning.
I am not a morning person, so I was glad for all the announcements and everything else. Oh, I see you got the portable mic.
You can put it on.
Okay, cool. Is this still good here? Okay. Still here, huh? Yeah, my shirt's fully buttoned up this time. There. Okay. Work? Here okay? Hey. How many here have never been to any kind of a 12-step program? Okay. If anything I say gets like, huh? Ask me to explain it, because it's really easy to fall off into 12-step ease, so to speak, and go from there. It'll take me a minute to get in here. Well, okay. Then let's go through these 20 questions. I love these 20 questions. You can give these to almost anybody who had anything less than a nurturing childhood. And they're gone. They're hooked. They're yours. I guess at what normal is. For me, it meant... you identifying there? For me, it meant that whenever I entered a room of people I didn't know, because I had no sense of self, I would have to watch them and see how they were behaving so I would know how to behave in this specific room with this specific group of people. And that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. Because I never felt that whoever I was, whatever I was, wherever I came from was never enough. It was just never enough. And that doesn't change for those of us who have eating disorders and drinking disorders and drug disorders and gambling disorders and love and sex addiction disorders. That doesn't change. I was as capable the first 15 years or more that I was sober of still doing that. Walking into a room and trying to figure out who I was and how I was supposed to behave. Oh, man. And I used to resent people who were comfortable, you know, and didn't fit, and they were comfortable. They were just okay with who they were. My ex-wife, my daughter's mom, she's so good at that, you know. It's like, she just used to dream and drive me nuts, you know. It's like, we'd be at a big dinner party, you know, she was bored, she'd go in the host or hostess bedroom and take a nap. Like, you know, and I'd go say, oh, God, Tina, these are our neighbors. I mean, you know, geez, you know. I'm still dealing in the disease, you know. She said, I have no intention of sitting out there at a table full of 20 people that bore me. And she was right, you know, she's extremely right brain. They're all left brain, and nothing they said was of any interest to her. Not at all. I couldn't do that. I stay at the table, you know. I stay at the table. Maybe now I wouldn't, but I used to stay at the table. So you ever find, I imagine you probably have found yourself doing that. At a job, you start a new job. Instead of bringing my own identity to it, I find out how, what the other people and what they talk about. You know, I can remember my second or third job sober. Third job sober was in a tool and die factory. I was a die caster, and I was taking lunch with these guys who had pickup trucks with campers and little fishing boats. And now I'm only, you know, 3 years off the streets from drug addiction, alcoholism, armed robbery, jail, prison, this, you know, the whole list of things. And I'm sitting here with these yokels who want to talk about going out on a weekend fishing. Well, you know, it's like, oh, God. You know, didn't you shoot somebody? Don't you have something to talk about with some excitement? It was fishing with your... I mean, I used to just sit there having lunch with these guys and telling them about my weekend fishing trip, which is pure bullshit, you know. And I wanted to scream. I wanted to just scream. I can't take this. Finally, I had to start eating alone just to protect my sanity. Because I really did not know how to be me and fit. Well, sober, clean and sober. 3 years, probably. 3 years. I have difficulty following projects through from beginning to end. This was not a problem for me for probably the first 15 years I was sober. I mean, does that shock you? First 15 years, this was not a problem for me. Can you figure out why it was not a problem for me? That's right. I never started any projects other than those that were necessary to feed me. I used to read books about these writers who wrote just because they loved to write. And the very first thing I wrote and that I submitted, people bought. The studio bought it, and I was off being a paid writer. So when I had my first bad year, 3 years in, I was in shock. You know, and then people are saying, well, write something. Sit down and write something, you know, just for the fun of writing. I thought, huh? I mean, I don't know how to write for the fun of writing. I do now, but I don't know how to write for the fun of writing. I write for a paycheck. You tell me I got a deal, write an episode for this show, and I'm home, and I put it off as long as possible because I'm ADD, and then when I have 3 days left to deliver an entire, you know, 60-minute script, I do it. And it's done. And I'm completely exhausted and blitzed, but it's done. But otherwise, I can't concentrate. But a good way to avoid this one, if you want some rest, is just don't start any projects. It'll take a lot of pressure off of you and out of your life, and you'll feel a lot less guilty, you know, and you don't have this stuff hanging around. I lie when it would be just as easy to tell the truth. I don't know that I identify a lot with that one. I know people who have. I had a writing partner one time that was truly a pathological liar. And I used to just say to him, you know, if you had told that guy the truth, you wouldn't be in this trouble. And he never got it. He never got it. I mean, I was around this guy for 18 months and he never got it. He would lie about everything. He couldn't stop himself. Couldn't stop himself. And what made it really hard on people, it was a big, sort of, in that Greek way, handsome kind of guy and a nice, charming smile. And, you know, he had a lot of charm. And so he would drive people, you know, one person after another, nuts. Because they'd look at him and then he'd tell them something and then somehow it would come up that that wasn't true and they'd think, well, it must be me. You know, until he'd had them lied off into another, you know, dimension of life. I'll tell the truth if it's going to get me out. I'll lie when I think the lie will work. Absolutely. You know, we have so much furor over our president not telling the truth. I agree he has a very, very definite responsibility to his office. I do not disagree with that at all. But he's also got to tell Hillary, you know what I mean? How many guys in this room would go home to Hillary and say, hey, guess what I did tonight? I don't think so. You know, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. What'd you do tonight? Oh, honey, just went out and played cards with the guys, you know? Smoked a couple of cigars and... Stop it, Bob. It's too early in the morning. I judge myself without mercy. This is one of my favorites. If anyone on this planet ever said to me about me what I say to me about me, I would have absolutely no choice but to take their life. I would not tolerate it. I hold myself in very little regard. This is learned behavior. Understand that. This is learned behavior and can be unlearned. But it's the message I got when I was a kid about how important I was. And then I carry that into life. I will take better care of you than I will take of me. I will drive you 150 miles to the best possible specialist in whatever ailment you have that you need to have taken care of. won't hesitate to drive you to the best one. Know you deserve the best one, and it's my responsibility to take you to the best one. Conversely, I will put it off for me probably until I have to see a doctor in the emergency room. Screw getting advanced treatment. If I have progressed enough where I'll get advanced treatment, I'm going to go to the guy down the street that's close. Forget the fact his last 7 patients have died. It doesn't matter. This time it'll be different. I will not put that effort into taking care of myself. And that's still a problem I have. That's why I'm such a periodic with exercise. You know, I get going strong and then I'll get, you know, like this. And then I think, oh, God, I got to start again. And it's like taking care of me. I can go to the gym with you and even coach you. I can take the time out of my life for you. I don't know how to take time out of my life for me. I go through periods where the simple acts of shaving and showering and just taking care of myself are too much. But if you were in my home and you were sick or something, I would carry you to the bathroom and shave you and put you in the tub and bathe you and get you comfortable in bed, and the sheets would be clean, and you know. But I have tremendous difficulty doing that for me. And that's a real indicator of a symptom of being an adult child. A monstrous one. And it also transfers right over to codependency. That's, you know, easier to take care of others than ourselves. Dependent on the other person. Yeah. I function better in life with a partner than I do without. It's almost like I need the other person there so we can go to the gym together. So we can hike together. I love to hike. I haven't hiked in a year. So that we can, you know, whatever. I just do better. Right? Well, I can remember when that wouldn't have been acceptable to me. I'm supposed to be Superman. I got to do all these things by myself. Well, no, that's not the idea of recovery from being an adult child. It is not to be a Superman or a Superwoman. It is to find out who you are and then be that person. You know, there's all this talk about intimacy, and you got to be intimate, and I can't be intimate, and there's intimacy this and intimacy that. And you ask most people what intimacy is, they don't even know. They don't even know what the hell it is they're trying to be. My favorite of all time definitions of intimacy is me being me and letting you see me. That's it. That's all it is. Me being me and letting you see me. Can you think how hard that is? That's telling the truth to your mate about stuff. What you really feel. What you really think. Instead of giving them whatever it is to keep the peace. That's a mother, let me tell you. But it's great when you can do it. It's one of the most freeing things I have ever experienced. Relationships. We'll do a little on that this morning. It's always good because we'll do a little bit on the original dynamic duel. Most of us are relationships early ones, and up to when we have some form of recovery, are directly off of what we watched at home with mom and dad. We're either doing the same thing or the opposite. But the one thing we're not doing is finding out who we are and being who we are. You know? This whole thing of perfection. I need to be perfect. I need to be, which is another way of saying I need to be in control. I need to be in control. Control is so much fun. As long as everybody kind of goes along, you know. It's when they begin to disagree. I have difficulty having fun. Adult children have closets full of the finest skiing gear, the finest water skiing gear, the best roller blades, the best workout gear, all of which has never been used. all of which has never been used, we can't go out there and do it. So much stuff piled up and built up. You know? My daughter is my best teacher. She says to me to this day, her last trip out here at one point, we were sitting on the couch just kind of talking, and she leaned over and she said, "Dad, you're too serious." You know? I hear that from her once every visit. And with her, I think, "Wow, this is great. I'm so free, you know." And so, yeah, she's like, "Oh, Dad, come on, will you? Loosen up. I ride all the rides. What the hell does she want, you know?" I'm at Six Flags in that, you know, in the Viper, you know, completely paralyzed from panic, you know, but I'm on it. Why is she complaining? You know, I can't understand it. I have a terrible time having fun. I can do better having fun with someone else than I can by myself. It's very, very, very hard for me to do fun things. I take a trip like a car trip. I'm destination oriented. I am not about the journey. I am not at all about the journey. I must get from point A to point B. I see nothing in between. I would drive back and forth from New Mexico to Tucson when we were moving, or New Mexico to California, countless times. Both Tina and I are the same in this area. I know she's better at getting involved in the journey, but you put us together, it becomes hopeless. And, you know, we had CB radios in the cars, we had radar detectors, we had everything that we could have, laser beam detectors. And I mean, we're booking it across these states. I won't even want to tell you how many tickets I got passing through Arizona. And, you know, it's like, it became a joke after a while, you know. It's like, you see the same state patrol, "Hey, man, how are you?" He says, "Gotta like this new car here. You can really cook in it." I said, "Well, I didn't see you." He said, "I know that." "But I wasn't enjoying a journey, man." You can't enjoy the journey at 90 miles an hour. You know what I'm saying? You got to be alert. You got to have one eye on a goddamn radar detector. You got to have one ear listening to the CB radio. You got to have half of the eye you got on the radar detector, on the laser detector. I mean, you're talking on the CB. You're trying to find out where the next cops are. I mean, you're just smoking. There's no time for the journey. I'm comfortable in being destination-oriented. It's what people fly today. Why take the time to take a trip? Why stop the car at some point for no other reason than just to stop the car and walk up a hill and see what's on the other side of the hill? That's what kids love to do. And as most of us seem to still be stuck with one living in us, you know? But I'm not comfortable with that. That's sort of, I don't know what's coming over the hill. I don't know. This is a little too relaxing. This makes me anxious. You know, I like that tension. I'm better focused if I'm just like, you know, that's me. That works for me. I can concentrate when I've got all that going on the CB, you know. Only rarely can I stop and take a hike up the hill. The last time I remember doing it was a couple years ago. I was on a trip and I stopped and went up this hill and sat down and watched the Colorado River for a while. Is that sad? You may not think so, but it is to me. See, what makes it sad for me is if I didn't care about that stuff, it wouldn't bother me, but I do care. I do want to stop the car. I do want to drive so I can at least get a sense of whether it's a tree or a billboard I just passed. You know, I mean, I just, you know, I want to do that. I want to get out of the car and go for a walk. But it's so hard. So it's very frustrating. I need to work on that. Well, this of course goes right with it. I take myself very seriously. I'm just going to go past that one. Well, do you listen to your own thinking? Intently? A lot of the time? I mean, anxiety has been my drug of choice in recovery. I like anxiety because I don't need anybody else to help me create it. I can sit home alone in a chair by myself, and I can create my own anxiety and make myself completely nuts. And so I have these voices that talk to me all the time, and the only way I can stop them is I must ask them what is the source of their information. Because my mind will get me completely nuts telling me stuff it knows nothing about. Usually that has to do with some kind of mental illness or physical illness, or some economic, world economic view. It's like, you know, I mean, I have trouble keeping my checking account, right? I need to be worried over the world economic crisis right now. Like, you know, it's just hysterical. But I take myself so very serious. Yeah, that's right. Well, if Asia grows, then we got to worry about Brazil and then Brazil. And I'm off, man. I'm in this total, you know, global financial disaster when I've got a nice private little financial disaster at home going for myself, you know, that could use a lot more attention currently than the global one, you know. But I'm like, oh yeah, this is serious stuff out here. And then I listen to the voices. Ask sometimes when you're talking to yourself about something, ask the voices in you that are speaking to you, what is their source of information? You'll usually find out they don't have one. I don't know. Channel 2 News. Boy, there's a reliable source, you know. By all means, take everything you read and see on TV to heart. I overreact to changes over which I have no control. Huh? How's the weather for one? Fucking raining! We had a picnic plan! We can get umbrellas. You know, we're trying to fix the rain. Oh, I'll get umbrellas and take the basket. I got plans. You know, we'll get the pads we use for the sleeping bags and put them down so that we don't get too wet from the water on the ground. You know, we'll put the blankets down and umbrella and we'll have lunch. Why don't you just eat it in the living room? You know, but I can't. You know, I got plans. Plans. Life is what's happening while you're busy making plans, by the way. That's a very good one to remember. Life is going on while you're sitting making plans. That's why show up is my favorite. Other people. I've spent all my life trying to control my relationships. When it comes down, I have no control over other relationships. I have watched people suffer such anguish over the behavior of a brother or a sister or a child or a lover or a husband or a wife over which they have no control. That's a killer, that one. You have no control. And I find I can be, when I get to the place where I can accept the fact that I have no control over this person, I become more helpful. I become a better influence on the situation. As long as I think there's something I can do and I can change them and I can, I am not that helpful in the overall picture. But the minute I can say there's nothing I can do, I can't do anything here. Now my mind goes click. And my mind opens, and now I can begin to see the solutions instead of the problem. And then I become effective. And that's a nice place to be, which is effective. And it takes a lot of angst and anguish out of my life. You know? And then God, I can bring God in when I get out of the, where I move beyond where I think I have control and I have to fix it. Remember, a lot of us raised our parents, so for us to feel like we have to fix everybody's problems is instinctual. You know, it's learned behavior. We had to raise the drunk. You know, a lot of us guys were told after our fathers had driven their car off of a cliff that we're the man now. It's our responsibility to take care of mom, 10 years old, you know. I have a biography I'm working on now of a famous musician, and I was, his brother was saying that his older brother was like 4 years older, and he was saying after dad died when he was about 9, Well, that's the first line he got, was you got to take care of your mom. You're the man now. You're the man. And anyway, enough of that one. Boy, that's a tough one. Change, control. Why do I need to control things? I need to control things for the same reason that I'm guessing at what normal is. See, I don't know that it's okay to say that I don't know. I think to say I don't know is a public admission that I am flawed as a human being. That's a tough one. I am flawed as a human being. It was never okay in my house to say, I don't know. That was a guaranteed punch. I don't know. It's an admission of inadequacy. I'd have opinions on everything even though I didn't know anything about it. And I mean serious opinions. Stern expressions. Well, I believe that, you know. Rather than say, God, that's interesting. Now, today, and it's such an asset to my writing, people mention words I don't know. I ask them, what does that mean? They'll ask me about something, I'll say, I don't know, you know? They'll tell me about it. Now, they may be like me, giving me total bullshit, you know, out of some need, but I double-check all my sources now, out of because it's essential, so... Then I'll get online or something and find out this guy really does know about chirogenic fuels, you know. But it's about that thing of, you know, I'm guessing at what normal is, and I have to control things. The more I can control my environment, the less I worry about you finding out that I am inadequate and that I am incomplete and that I am full of shame. There's a saying, it's a bit offensive, but it's the power of it is so true. Is see if anybody comes to mind when you hear this one. It's very hard to shit on a Girl Scout. How many Girl Scouts do you know in your life? Maybe your mom, maybe you. You do everything right and you do it all the time and you're busy all the time. Nobody can get mad at you. You won't have any confrontations. The house runs smooth, the children are clean, the clothes are clean, the food's on the table. Da 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 da. Pretending to be somebody you aren't to keep the peace. A Girl Scout. That's a powerful one. And the same can be said for a Boy Scout. I don't have a lot of reality on that, only because of where I come from. If I came from a financially better off family that lived in a different area, I might have more reality on that be a Boy Scout thing. You know, I have no reality on it. I'm a street kid. That's in me and probably will be in me until I die. I was in the Boy Scouts for 6 weeks. They threw me out. You know, it's like... And I was trying to help. I mean, everything that's on this list... everything that's on this list, I was doing when I was 12 years old, you know. They were going to go on, it was not a real affluent area that I grew up in, anything but South Central LA. They're going on a camping trip, and they had a shortage of equipment for the camping trip. Okay? So my buddy and I went down and knocked off the Coleman warehouse. We stole about 30 sleeping bags and, you know, 20 camp stoves and 50 lanterns, and I mean, we just haul all the shit out of there. We could haul out of there, you know. And we gave it to the troop for the camping trip. Is this not a good thing? Well, my whole life, I've always been standing there saying, well, it seemed like a good idea to me, you know. I can't understand why everybody else is upset with it. I thought it was terrific, hell. You know, I have generosity, I risk, you know, I'm down there in the dark lurking in an alley in downtown L.A., you know, it's like, come on, use this stuff, have a great camping trip. Instead, of course, I was used as an example of what it, you know, not to be a Boy Scout means. I feel different from other people. I know I'm different from other people. I know I'm different from other people. I walk into a room, I'm different. I don't think it, I know it. It's coming from a family where there's great tension in the home, it's as much a part of the fiber of my being as oxygen, as tendons. When I walk into a room of people I do not know, and I know I am different. And my difference is not good. For me, it's never I am better than. It is I am lesser than, and therefore need to be quiet and isolate or pretend. But I don't walk in rooms feeling like I'm superior to the people in the room. This is talking about rooms full of people we don't know. And it works in rooms full of people we do know, but I'm very judgmental, so I can usually find somebody in the room I do feel superior to. Because I know some recent little piece of gossip about them or something that works, you know, I can... I constantly seek approval and affirmation. Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts again. Inability to have confrontations. You know how hard it is to stand up for yourself and what you believe? That's tragic. Absolutely tragic. My daughter is 10 and will send back the food if it's not what she ordered. If it's not hot, if it's not right, if it's, you know, she has no trouble asking people what she wants, telling them it's not right. 10 years old. I was still 10 years sober eating, you know, breakfasts I didn't order and food that was cold and, you know, I'm not going to make a scene. I'm not going to, because I have to be real careful. See, I'm walking on, I'm on like a teeter-totter with that stuff. On this end is the pain and the shame and everything else, and on this end is the anger. So I can't appropriately send back anything. If I go off, I'm gone. And my reaction to the circumstances is so out of proportion with whatever the circumstances are that it's just, I humiliate myself. I have gone off into dry cleaners over a lost shirt. You'd think they switched babies on me in the hospital. It was just a shirt, you know, a shirt. When I'm trying to be good, when in my early sobriety, it just didn't work, you know. I remember dealing with a vacuum cleaner guy once and walking out, and he said to my wife, "Boy, he's really furious, isn't he?" I thought I'd done really good. I kept my voice down. I did, you know, I was really trying to be good. So I'd rather just say, "Yeah, that's cool," or not send it back. You know, I blew up one time in a restaurant, and this waitress, I said, "This isn't right. This is not right. This is not what I ordered." And she checked her check, and she had written down what I ordered. And she said, "Oh God," she's like, you know, like she's going to the electric chair. And I said, "What does it matter?" You know, she was kind of these sweet kind of little people sitting on the branch, you know, waiting for the person to feed her the worm. A bit of a victim, which I like because I'm a great, you know, rescuer. Ride in on my white steed. And I shot him recently. I decided he was getting me in too much trouble. So she said, "Well, the cook was a drunk and a maniac." And, you know, she went back with this. He'd just go off. Well, I had a solution for that, you know. When the police removed me, I had the cook on the floor and one of his knives at his throat, and I was nipping off little pieces of his ear as I was telling him how I was going to carve up his body because he was such a jerk to the people that worked for him. My sponsor explained to me when he got me out of jail, it was a bit of an overreaction to the circumstances. And he would appreciate if I, you know, he's going to help me find another way to deal with people. Well, I'm an extremist. It's either or for me. So I go from that kind of behavior to just capitulating, to not bringing it up, to not making a scene. Just go along. Go along and die and suffer. I'm reading a book right now. I read a great line in it. A man does not have to die to lose his life. I thought, whoa. I am either super responsible or super irresponsible. I am capable of being both on the same day. You know? In the morning I can get up so responsible it makes me ill. And by nightfall, I am just screwed up the entire afternoon with things that need to be done. I am extremely loyal even in the face of evidence that the loyalty is undeserved. None of you here probably identify with that. Reagan was a great example of being an adult child in a public stage. I mean, all the people he had in his cabinet and stuff, I mean, deserved no loyalty at all. They were sleazebags. And he just continued to stand up for them. You know, that's right, that's okay. Yeah. I look for immediate as opposed to deferred gratification. How about you? Anybody else here have trouble delaying gratification? Show of hands here. Now, this is not a workshop for, you know, this is about participation. My buddy went up to shoot the interview with Ken Kesey on this show we're doing, and for those of you who know him and know who he is, he's always believed in participation. So there was some celebration parade that weekend in Oregon. So the producer I'm working with had to wear this clown costume and march in the parade. And, you know, it was great. I thought, what an interesting concept. Participation. Participation. If you're going to be here with us, you're going to participate. You're going to participate. Oh God, immediate gratification. I'm so bad at that. I am so bad at that. And the two things that I'm really bad on it with, well, there's more than two. Money would be one, sex would be one. I've got that area pretty well whipped. Because it's because my priorities have changed. And this comes immediate gratification, particularly on foods that I crave but I know are no good for me, like sugar and salt and grease. And I can delude myself that I've got this stuff under control. It's like drinking and using. I can have one Pepperidge Farm, Tao, white chocolate, macadamia nut. Oh, come on. I can have one if I throw the other bag out of the car on the way home, you know. Otherwise, this is not going to happen, one, you know. Or I'll get a can of Planters cashews and oil and salt and be thinking when I take it off the shelf, how intelligent it is of them to now have this plastic cap so that you can store the nuts after you've eaten a few. All right? Yeah, like I need the plastic cap, you know. An hour later, I've got a ring around my face from trying to lick the salt and the grease out of the bottom of the can. You know. But I'll stand there and say that stuff to me in the market and say, you know, believe it. Believe it. Because I want immediate gratification. I want that taste now. Now, not tomorrow. I don't want one. I want to get there and get into it till I'm satiated. Some things don't change. What did I get a hold of the other night that I thought I would be really good with? I haven't eaten sugar in a couple months or so now, so I'm being good with the sugar. Oh, it was those potato chips that have no fat. And that tube, they come in a tube. Yeah? Yeah. I thought, hey, cool, no fat, can't be that great, you know, take it home, I'll eat, you know, third of the can tonight, third tomorrow night, you know. There was four left the next morning, you know. I ate the whole damn tube. So I thought, well, perhaps I can scratch these off the list too. That's a big area for me with immediate gratification. Well, let's talk about the relationship one too. I mean, people who are single, not in a relationship. I have had to learn that is absolutely essential for me if I am ever going to have if I'm ever going to fall in love and then move into real love again, that I've had to change my priorities about how I behave in a dating situation. So no longer for me, and this is pretty recent stuff, you know, last year, no longer for me is it okay to have sexual relations on the first date, the second date, the third date, the fourth date, the fifth date, just not in that range there. All my life, I'd spend the first or second date, I wouldn't even go out a third time. I mean, if we weren't doing it by the second date, you know, this is money that could be spent duller elsewhere, you know, was my attitude. And then the problem is I do not know the person that I have just slept with. Not only, that's okay, that's all right. No problem. I've had that happen to me. I really know how embarrassing it is. So I would be involved on a sexual level with this person who I didn't know. And then the tragedy is, as I get to know them, I don't like them. And the more I get to know, the less I like them. But I'm not able to confront. So I can't say to the person, you know, this ain't working. This is not happening here. When you do so-and-so, I feel this, I'm stuck. I'm in there till it dies a natural death. Praying for my partner to die, which was always my solution for a relationship that wasn't working. Not being able to have confrontation, I just thought if they die, we can end this. I'll be a widower, get a lot of attention, and I won't have to go through this. But they all lived, fortunately, and I had to go through it, and it just cost a ton of money. Costs a lot of money to get rid of a woman that knows you want to get rid of her. I never said I wanted to get rid of them. Don't misunderstand me for a second. It was never that honest or that open or on the table. Always covert. Always covert. I moved women into houses that I knew I wasn't going to stay in. But I wanted them comfortable so they wouldn't be angry at me when it blew apart. Other than simply being able to say to the person who I've been having sex with for months that this isn't working. I'd spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, which I'd love to have today, because I couldn't stand up and just say, hey, this ain't working. Yeah? So I've decided to try a new tack. Get to know the women first. I don't know how that will work. I've never experienced it. I have no idea, but it really appeals to me. It really, really appeals to me. Get to know the person in my life first. I like that. Tina and I were married for 8 years, maybe. That's by far the longest marriage I've ever been in. And when we first met, she was living with another guy, and so neither one of us would participate in any kind of activity that would be unfaithful to that situation or inappropriate to that situation. So we had no sexual relations in the beginning. It wasn't because we didn't want him. It wasn't because we weren't crazy about each other. It wasn't because we didn't talk about it all the time on the phone. It was just that neither one of us, you know, well, we both were in our own personal program.
Please turn the tape over at this time and continue listening on side two.